Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, if you're just getting in your car, you're just waking up, here's what you need to know. The Astros win 2-1 last night. The Rockets close out the Oklahoma City Thunder 104-102 in just an extremely stressful and appropriate Game 7 to close out that series. The Rockets finally won a close game in that series. They won the most important one. They move on to play the Lakers. We'll dig into that series a little bit more at 7:15. And the Texans, they close out their allotted number of padded practices with a scrimmage last night at NRG Stadium. Boy, it's sometimes, Seth, it's tough when you ask a head coach to hand out superlatives. It's really hard to get them to name names sometimes. You know, when you say, hey, who's had a good camp? Name a guy who's had a good camp. Name this, name that. And especially Bill O'Brien likes to defer to the team. So I don't know. You know, look, I watched 10 practices and the scrimmage at training camp. So this guy really stood out to me as well. But for both Bill O'Brien and Anthony Weaver to single out Jacob Martineau, I just want to go back with some audio here. We'll hear from O'Brien in a second from last night, but here was Anthony Weaver back on August 26th when he was asked by McClain to name three guys who've had great training camps so far.
Three guys that have stood out to you since they reported that last week of July.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a front guy, so I'm going to try not to be biased in my answers there. But the first guy that stands out to me has been Jacob Martin. Jacob Martin, he's a guy that we asked to do multiple jobs. He rushes off the edge. He drops into coverage. I mean, he's a guy that can absolutely be a playmaker for us on defense.
Okay, so that's Weaver saying he rushes off the edge. He drops into coverage. Dropping into coverage would be an additional thing to his repertoire because he was not very good at dropping into coverage last year, as we saw in the Chiefs game. Now, here is Bill O'Brien last night after the scrimmage when asked not a specific question about Jacob Martin, but just asked a general question of who looked good tonight.
Jacob Martin.
I have a follow-up.
Jacob Martin played good tonight. That was the guy probably stood out. You know, Stevie Mitchell made a few plays. Scotty Phillips ran hard. So, yeah, no, but Jacob Martin, he's had a good camp.
All right, so Seth, two superlatives for Jacob Martin.
Yeah, and, you know, somebody texted me last night, and it kind of caught me off surprise because he said, oh, no, what's happening with Jacob Martin? And I don't think it was anything. So Jacob Martin just tweeted something. He just tweeted a little peace sign.
Put up the deuces.
Yeah, he just put up the deuces.
Yeah.
And somebody said, Seth, I hope the Texans didn't release Jacob. All we heard all training camp was how great Jacob is doing. Seth, you got any ideas on what's going on?
Release him? Like, there's a better chance he gets 3 years, $18 million a year.
Yeah, I know. He said so Jacob Martin tweeted out, yep, and then the little deuces with a hand sign. So I don't know what that means other than that, like, I would imagine – I would interpret that as maybe he got some good news right before the scrimmage. Maybe he was starting at outside linebacker or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or they told him, hey, you definitely made the team.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was just that like he had a nice date with his girlfriend.
Could
I have
be.
No clue
Could
whatsoever.
Be.
But I wouldn't interpret that as anything negative about Jacob Martin. I would be extremely surprised unless somehow they're doing all this and saying all this to try to get a nice trade deal for him or something.
Yeah, I doubt that. He plays a position of need for this team. And he's, you know, look, Seth, he was a piece that came over in the Clowney trade. We'll see how it translates to the regular season. He's just, by and large, been going against second-teamers from the Texans throughout training camp. You know, he's been abusing Charlie Heck at practice and things like that. You know,
yeah,
it'll
you didn't
be different
a whole lot of,
when the regular
you didn't see a whole
season
lot
starts.
Of Laremy Tunsil or Titus Howard reps with him.
Yeah, I mean, not really. I mean, because Laremy Tunsil didn't play a ton of 11-on-11. You know what I mean? Like, it's Laremy was a guy who, you know, JJ. If I'm kind of power ranking the guys who played very, you know, from the guys who played the least to the guys who played the most in the 11-on-11s among the guys who matter on this team. J.J. played not at all. Will Fuller played hardly at all. Brandon Cooks played hardly at all. Laremy Tunsil was not far behind those guys in terms of the, you know, the minimal number of reps sitting. He played a decent chunk, but there was a lot of Roderick Johnson in there as well.
Yeah.
But back to Jacob Martin, I mean,
this would be with Jacob Martin, I think, okay, let's say for him to, you know, start opposite of Whitney Mercilus, to take Brennan Scarlett's place, the big, big, big leap that Jacob Martin would have had to take, like let's say, for instance, that he was giving up those deuces because he had just heard he was a starter. I'd be surprised just because he was not nearly as good versus the run as Brennan Scarlett was last year. And without any competition against non-Texans players, I'd have a hard time thinking that they would make a position change based on that. I do think Jacob Martin's going to get heavy, heavy rotation use in not just passing situations, but maybe 50-50 run pass situations where they can disguise some of his deficiencies against the run until he shows and proves that he can at very least stand up to tight ends.
Yeah. So Jacob Martin getting a lot of love. And look, you know, if Jacob Martin works out to be an important piece of this defense, people may not want to hear it, but if Jacob Martin and somehow Gary and Conley can find his way back into the starting lineup, those are two pieces you got in the Clowney trade that might wind up being important pieces of this defense this year.
O'Brien threw out a little wrinkle if we're talking about guys making the team or getting news that they made the team. After the scrimmage last night, I hadn't really thought of this. The final cuts are on Saturday, yeah, but the Texans play on Thursday.
Yeah.
So to actually get your practice squad in and working, and especially with these COVID restrictions, where you have to you got to basically quarantine these guys, right, for 3 days before they can actually be out on the field.
They have to pass 3 COVID tests.
Yeah, so I think logistically, I don't know if anybody cares about this or not. I'm just trying to think of it from a coach's perspective. You know, you've got a scout team in pro football usually, and your starters and your backups are going to get a certain amount of scout team reps, but you want to have a pretty healthy practice squad to play scout team. If you don't have the practice squad there, then all of a sudden your starters are taking more practice squad reps or scout team reps than you'd want, and you're wearing their legs out. So that's a little bit of a challenge. I wonder if they'll get a jump on some of the preparation for the Chiefs right now, because they'll be limited in numbers on Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
That's a really good point that you make. I think that's something people need to understand as this roster takes shape over the next few days, is that there is going to be little to no outside help coming in, I think, because of what you just said. Even a guy, like they signed that Darren Bates guy like a week and a half ago. That dude had to fly into Houston, sit in a hotel for 3 days, get COVID tested for 3 days until he's finally allowed over to the facility just to work out for them and show them what he can do. They sign him. He's on the team for like 4 days. Cut.
Yeah,
think of the investment that goes into a guy who was basically practiced like 3 times and then he's gone.
Sean, I imagine you are going to see, I don't know how you do handle it financially, but I think you're going to see record numbers of guys on IR, because if somebody gets hurt in practice and you need to call some guy on a Thursday to come in and play for you on Sunday, I don't know if it's even possible.
Right.
So you've got to have guys in the system. So this year you're allowed to call up an unlimited number of players from injured reserve. But those guys all count against the salary cap. You got to figure out some way to just have a full roster on game day if you have injuries during the week. It's going to be I don't want to say a nightmare. I mean, they'll figure out a way through it, but teams are going to have to get really creative with all this
stuff. This is what I think you're going to see, Seth. I think you're going to see that you're going to have the 53-man roster. They have a 16-man practice squad now, so it's a much bigger practice squad with broader rules. You're allowed to have, I think, a half a dozen veterans on the practice squad. But this is, now that you talk that through, I think what you're going to see is that injured reserve is going to turn into almost this in-between practice squad. It's almost going to be like a soft practice squad, if you will, where look, we need this guy, but we need numbers, but we don't want to put him on the practice squad either because we can't, or we already have our 16, but he's got a nagging ankle or something. Like, he's got an ankle that's probably enough of an injury for us to stash him there for 3 or 4 weeks and then figure the rest out later.
It gets tricky, though, just financially.
Salary cap, I get that.
Yeah, because, like, you can. So once you put a guy on IR, you're not getting out of paying that salary. So you got to pay that salary whether you reactivate him or not. And then all of a sudden later in the year, when maybe you want to sign or trade for a guy, then you got salary cap issues. It's a whole lot of this for a second year general manager and a first time football executive like Jack Easterby. There's a whole lot of diciness to this season. There's a whole lot of muddy waters to navigate your way through.
It is a puzzle, man. There's no doubt about it. There is no doubt about it. All right. The Lakers and the Rockets starts tomorrow. Is Mike D'Antoni's circle of trust, is his circle of trust, we talk about that a lot, on that concept a lot on this show, is Mike D'Antoni's circle of trust shrinking? And where is Harden in our trust level right now? We'll talk about it next.
I've been locked in, obviously, just all year long, trying to be better on that side of the ball. And tonight was emphasis on it. And so came up with a big block to win the game. And just trying to be engaged as much as possible offensively. Had a rough shooting night, you know, turned the ball over a little bit too much, but tried to find the ways to impact the game and came up with a huge block to end the game.
James Harden, his big play came at the defensive end, a block shot of Lu Dort on a three-point attempt that would have won the game, or at least would have put the Thunder ahead late in the game last night. Instead, the Rockets go on to win 104-102. Even Seth, even when that shot got blocked out of bounds and there's half a second left, they put 2.7 on the clock, which after you have a half a second on the clock, yeah, you feel like, man, with a half a second, you inbound it, and all you got to do is basically just bounce it off of somebody and the clock runs out. Scott Foster walks over there and puts 2.7 back on the clock. And by the way, it did feel like they had to beat Scott Foster last night as well at times. I don't like to be complaining about the ref guy, but Scott, yeah, Foster, some of that stuff was super shady, man. At any rate, they put 2 points.
Chris Paul complained about him. Chris Paul's going to get fined because he named him by name afterwards.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and Chris Paul lights cigars with $1,000 bills with that contract. I think he'll be okay.
I'm just saying, everybody thinks Scott Foster's out to get them. Scott Foster just sucks as a referee.
Yeah, he's bad.
And supposedly all these people say, like, no, actually he grades out well. Okay, well, he's really bad. This is kind of like, well, yeah, usually I'm faithful to my wife. Just every now and then I go to an orgy. Like, that's Scott Foster.
Right.
Like, when his mistakes are really bad mistakes.
So this would be my recommendation to Scott Foster, is just stop making calls 5 seconds after the play ends that you just called the foul. You know what I mean? Like, you're better off swallowing the whistle with a no call than being the guy that makes every single call 3 seconds after the play is dead. You know what I mean? Like, these late calls where he comes sprinting in from the other side of the arena to make a call are ridiculous. I don't want to turn this into a Scott Foster segment, but the Rockets, they win last night. James Harden makes the big play defensively to block that shot, and he was happy that his big play came on defense last night.
Like, it's cool to, you know, get 40 or 50 points or be shooting the ball extremely well. Obviously, we all want to do that, but just to get recognition and for it to pay off, you know, when it counts on the defensive end, and show that I've been engaged and locked in, for it to show in a clutch moment. It means a lot.
Yeah, so credit where it's due. James played great defense in this series. He was really, really good, and he's been good defensively this season. It would be nice, James, if you did get back to scoring 40 or 50 at some point again. They're going to need that in this series.
It's nice to, you know, it's nice to drop 40, 50 points, whatever. Yeah. But I'm all about the defense. What if he just starts only caring about defense and just that's his thing. Defense is my jam.
Yeah.
Lu Dort inspired me.
Yeah.
It was a great play at the end of that game. Earlier in the bubble in the regular season, we saw his great defensive play versus Giannis Antetokounmpo at the end when it really mattered. Remember Antetokounmpo fell down like a foundering child?
Yes.
Yeah, that was really good defense by James Harden. We've seen that now. I think even for the most part, most of the NBA knows that James Harden is not the same defender that showed up in those Vine videos. I mean, half of the NBA is too young to even know what a Vine is, Sean.
I was about to say, look at you with your Vine videos.
My nephew, who loves Antetokounmpo, and I try to, he's too young for him to get the trash talk that I speak about Antetokounmpo. Right. He doesn't understand it.
He just thinks you're a mean uncle.
Yeah. He just thinks I'm a jerk. He doesn't know what a Vine is,
right,
and he also doesn't know that James Harden was once thought of as an atrocious defender.
Yeah. Yeah, so James was good this series defensively. Now, he was atrocious offensively last night, and he wasn't passive. He just wasn't good.
Yeah.
And the Rockets got rescued last night. They've been rescued in this series by Robert Covington rediscovering his shot. Covington has been awesome in this series. And Eric Gordon, credit to Eric Gordon, he found his shot last night. The two of them were 11 of 20 from three. If even just one of those guys doesn't have the game they had last night, they don't win that game. So those two were great shooting the basketball. Gordon, I could do without him dribbling and thinking he's a point guard at times and turning the ball over, but whatever. I guess you take the bad with the good. Seth, Mike D'Antoni's circle of trust appears to be doing its annual thing where it shrinks to like 5.5 guys by the time you get to the second or third round of the playoffs.
Look, the McLemore thing is, I get it. They need you're playing this ridiculously small basketball. You need defense. And in terms of playing good defense, it played out, right? None of these were exorbitantly scored games. You'd like to figure out a way to sprinkle in these guys, especially when nobody's playing well or shooting well. Sprinkle in some of the guys who can give you that offense. But I'm still, like, I go into this Lakers game way more concerned about defense. Not that I'm scared defensively. They can play small ball versus these guys. I keep seeing all these Lakers, fans be like, well, who's going to guard AD? All of them, you dumbasses, they switch everything.
Right.
It's not rocket science on that side of it. It's the rebounding. It's everything else that comes with
it. Yeah, I do wonder if this was just a bad series to have McLemore on the floor, because the one thing that the Thunder could do much better than the Lakers can do is actually fight you mano a mano when it comes to the small part of the game, the wing part of the game. They have very athletic.
It's a three-point line.
Right. Yeah, they have very athletic guards. You know, Chris Paul. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Schroeder was a pain in the ass all seven games of this series. The Baisley kid from the outside. They have a bunch of guys, a bunch of wings and point guards and ball handlers that they can throw at you. And I think that may be what we found out in this series, Seth, is that it's not so much for this Rockets team that it's tough to match up with teams that have size. It is inherently because you're a smaller team. But if you have a team that can go right at you with equally skilled guys in that on the perimeter, and especially if they've got a big guy that's not horrible when it comes to shooting the basketball, like Gallinari or, you know, Steven Adams around the rim, that kind of thing, that becomes a really tough matchup. I'm not here to tell you that Anthony Davis and LeBron James are an easier matchup for the Rockets. They're not. They're both great players. They're two of the top 10 players in the league. But I do think that they're going to be coming at the Rockets in a much more they're going to be coming at the Rockets in a way that this team sort of envisioned more when they put this small ball together. I think when they put this small ball together, they looked around the landscape and said, okay, the Clippers are a team with size. The Lakers are a team with size. The Bucks sure as hell are a team with size. Those are the teams. That's the standard we're competing with. We think we can do enough differently to where we make life just as hard on them as they make it on us. This Thunder thing, and especially when you add in just the Chris Paul revenge factor, this Thunder thing was not an animal they had drawn up on the chalkboard when they put the small ball together. This team was a problem for them.
It is this weird scenario where, you know, a lot of people are saying it's crazy, but it's true. I think the Rockets had more challenges versus the Thunder than they'll have versus the Lakers in terms of just strategy and scheme and style and all of that.
Yeah.
Like Anthony Davis will be the one big that can really stay on the floor out there. You can talk all you want about how great the Lakers bigs are. I don't think that you're going to see a whole lot of them. Are you going to have Dwight Howard out there running around with these guys?
About Dwight.
McGee, like, yeah. Stumbling to and fro. Hell no.
God, this
it's going to be AD and a bunch of guards.
Dude, this is, hey, if they find some way to get through the Lakers, then they probably play the Clippers, whose roster is full of former Rockets. Like, this thing is turning into a Rocket revenge tour with Chris Paul in the first round, Dwight Howard in the second round. If the Rockets find a way to beat the Lakers, now all of a sudden you've got Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams. There's some juicy former Rocket, jilted Rocket lover angles to these playoffs right now.
Beverley, did you see Beverley took some heat few days ago
for what?
He stood up one of the women executives of the Players Association was speaking, and apparently Beverly basically just interrupted her and tried to tell her to stop talking. And
really?
a bunch of the other players are like, "Whoa, bro! Whoa! I don't know what to make of these. All these. I don't like these meetings where there are these huge, massive leaks where somebody's giving a play-by-play of a meeting that's supposed to be confidential. But that was the story that was.
What, he interrupted her?
Yeah, but like in a really rude way. Oh, okay. Like, it sounded like it was kind of like, all right, this is a woman in a suit who knows what the hell she's talking about, and she's trying to inform you, and somebody just randomly is like, hey, hold on a second, I gotta talk, and everybody else stepped in.
Gotcha.
I don't know.
Gotcha. All right, so the
I've been trying to Beverly slowly. Like at first, the first year is gone. I wanted to say, oh, I'll never forget you, Beverly. I'll love you forever.
And
little
now?
Things along the way, he starts to irk you. Talking smack when they're playing the Rockets and all that. The moment that I started realizing I preferred Austin Rivers over Pat Beverly, I feel like a little piece of me died.
Yeah, no, I do feel like I was able to get to that place much quicker with Chris Paul. Like, wow, I'm hating this guy a lot faster than I thought I would. You're right, Beverly, it's been a multi-year process to get to hate Beverly. Yeah.
Apparently, Beverly continually interrupted this director. Yeah, disagreed with her logic. Sources close to the situation, which saw both the Clippers and Lakers abruptly walk out of the meeting. This was the meeting during when they were discussing the work stoppage, the Wildcat strike. Clippers and Lakers abruptly walked out of the meeting, saying that Roberts said these are financial issues that will directly impact players.
Oh, this was the meeting. This was the meeting in the when they were all protesting a week
ago. Yeah, this was the meet. Son of a
what?
Never go to complex.com ever.
Done.
It was just what the hell's going on here? So Roberts broke down the financial impact of ending the season early. Patrick Beverly of the LA Clippers, who reportedly voted to end the season early, as did the Lakers, continually interrupted Roberts during the meeting. Yahoo Sports reports that Roberts was going through the numbers when Beverly interrupted her to say he disagreed with her logic. Yeah. Sources close to the situation, which saw all this other stuff, said they stopped him. Despite this, he interrupted her once again, to which she asked if she could finish her point. He simply replied, "No, I pay your salary." And that's when Chris Paul and Udonis Haslam told him he was being disrespectful.
Okay. Did he call her a broad?
Not in as many words, but I mean, that's pretty much what he did.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
I pay your salary. That's a big one. Ooh. I don't know, man.
He should have just called her a broad because he had already crossed the line. As long as you're going to cross over the line, he should have just said, "I pay your salary, you broad." But he didn't. He was disrespectful. And I don't condone doing that, by the way. I was just curious if Patrick Beverly did it. All right. So 713-572-4610 if you want to hate text me now. All right. Up next, the formula to get paid is pretty evident if you are a Houston Texan. Bill O'Brien gave us the roadmap this past week. We will show you what it is next. All right. We will do headlines in about 13 minutes or so. Couple of hours from now, Darren Revelle's back with us. Since we're back on four-hour shows, Darren Revelle, the Action Network, will join us on the program. I put the poll up that I promised all of you a little bit earlier. So the poll is this is for Astro fans # Pender Poll at Sports Radio 610. As just discussed with at Seth C. Payne on the # P&P show, it's October. Runners on second and third, two outs, late in the game. Who do you trust more right now? And I put up the poll, George Springer or Kyle Tucker. So I just put it up less than a minute ago. So far, 9 of you have voted in the last 30 seconds. And Kyle Tucker is leading right now by a pretty wide margin, 67% to 33% over George Springer. We'll see. It's 9 votes, so I think we're going to wind up with more than 9 votes. I put it up like 38 seconds ago. So we'll keep an eye on that. But Tucker.
We're not allowing any mail-in ballots. So,
that's right. That's right. Yeah. No hanging chads.
Avoid that controversy.
Yeah. And Ocho texts in, you should change your poll to Springer or Greinke. Who do you trust more at the plate?
Well, Greinke's got like a, what's his lifetime OPS?
Like 600.
600.
Yeah.
He was over 1,000 last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this year he's not. Well, he'd be allowed to. You know what?
You can use him as a pinch hitter.
Go, what's his name from the Angels? I'll just Shohei Ohtani on this one. And just on his off days, have him go in and be a designated hitter.
Yep.
Let's just try it. Come on.
Yep.
Come on, Dusty. Dusty. Everybody's calling you old, saying you're washed up, saying you're afraid to try anything new and innovative.
Right.
How about rolling Zach Greinke out as a DH on his off days?
Yeah, progressive, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Honestly, though, too. Okay, not honestly, but you know, like, let's humor this a little bit. I feel like Greinke would be up for it.
Hell yeah! I think Greinke was disappointed. I think that was the one thing that disappointed him about going to the American League.
Yeah,
was the fact that he didn't get to hit anymore.
I think Greinke, if If Greinke were asked to do it, like, in the middle, well, you wouldn't be allowed to do this, but if you like, this hypothetical, if you were asked to do it in the middle of a game on his off day, he'd be like, oh, hell yeah, I'll go do that.
Yes.
There's no, there wouldn't be any hesitation.
He legitimately enjoys it. Absolutely. All right. Someone wants to know if you checked out the Expendables, like you said you were going to do, Seth.
Oh, no, I didn't. That was a lie when I said I was going to do that.
Okay, fair enough. That was,
I knew it as soon as I said it. I'm like, oh, I don't have time at all.
That's what I was about to say. That sounds like a lot of time you might have to take. All right.
I barely have time to clean and bathe. I'm not gonna do that.
Bill O'Brien was asked an interesting – yuck. Bill O'Brien was asked an interesting question earlier this week about J.J. Watt teaching some of the younger players or younger players learning from the example – the J.J. Watt sets. Here is what Bill O'Brien had to say.
There's a lot of veterans, like, and you ask about J.J., and I'll be specific to him. When you come in here as a young player or even a new player, and you have someone like J.J. Watt at your position, there are things that I believe you should do that you should watch him, how he does them. Now, certain things that he does, like, no one can do. I'll just be very honest with you. But there's other things that he can do that he does from a routine standpoint, from, you know, whether it's his work ethic or his, you know, how he, you know, works in a weight room or in the training room or obviously out on the practice field, you know, just the way he carries himself. I mean, I think there's a lot of things. And I, you know, again, I would use you come in there as a young player. You may not be a quarterback, but you should be watching Deshaun Watson, how he approaches every day, how he walks in the locker room, how he, you know, stays after practice, comes out early to practice, studies film, talks football with his teammates. I mean, I just think as a young player, if I was a young player, I would come into that locker room and I'd say, you know what, I'm going to watch these guys right here, Whitney Mercilus, Bernardrick McKinney, Zach Cunningham, Randall Cobb, Brandon Cooks, you know, DeAndre Carter. I mean, you go on and on. Nick Martin. I mean, where do you want me to stop? Brandon Dunn. I mean, we've got a lot of guys that I think you can use as examples that you can really say to yourself, man, there's a reason why that guy's played at a high level for a long time.
So the roadmap, Seth, I love the players that he rattled off in that cut. One, the outlier, I think, is DeAndre Carter, where you're like, wow, DeAndre Carter. Okay, well, that's, you know, it looks like he's making the team. But I think Bill O'Brien basically rattled off all of the contracts from like the last 6 months or 8 months where we were like, oh, that feels like a little bit of an overpay here. Like he rattled, like Whitney Mercilus got $13 million a year. We were saying like, love Whitney, but $13 million a year feels like a lot. Bernardrick McKinney, now that was a couple of years ago, but even Bernardrick McKinney, I guess that might have been the going rate at the time for an inside linebacker, but he got $10 million a year. Zach Cunningham just got paid. Randall Cobb got $9 million a year when I don't know that anybody else was even bidding on Randall Cobb in free agency. Cooks was already under contract. He mentions Carter. Nick Martin, when he got his deal, it was like, well, $11 million a year. Brandon Dunn got $4 million a year, and he's been just kind of a plugger in the middle of the defensive line. Seth, the roadmap is evident to make not only what you think you should make, but maybe a little sugar sweetener on the top of it. Be a good lead-by-example guy.
You will get rewarded
by William O'Brien, the general manager.
This falls into another category where I can appreciate his vision and his strategy here. I don't know if it's going to work out or if he's going about it exactly the right way. We'll find out. But I think that sometimes the worst thing a football team especially can do is when you try to import leadership or when you try to think that bringing in a key leader or having one or two key leaders on your team is going to make a bit of difference, because it doesn't. Like, there's just – a football team is too large, and teams spend too much of their time in their own little pods, like practicing with their position group, with their side of the ball, with the special teams, what have you, to where, like, a guy giving a speech in the morning about how hard it is, how important it is to work hard, doesn't really matter if you don't have a whole bunch of other veterans doing it. Right. So – if you ask me, okay, would I rather spend a little extra on Whitney Mercilus and a little extra on Brandon Dunn or Nick Martin, or would I rather maybe bring in Ed Reed for leadership? I guess I'd rather spend a few million extra on, because you're gonna make the mistake somewhere along the way. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have some bad signings. You're gonna overspend on certain guys. I'd rather spend on guys that I know are good leaders within the building. You know, and I wish I could remember which Rocket it was who had played with the. He had played with the Lakers for a spell. When he was a young player, he said that he never really understood what hard work was until he got to the Lakers. And he'd heard all the stories about Kobe, but to see it and to see all the shots he took after practice and to see how much extra time he put in to the point where, like, everybody wants to be the guy that sticks around afterwards or comes in early and everything, but the guys that genuinely do it day after day after day, like, that's how you stack on getting 0.1% better every single day, and all of a sudden you become awesome. There's a lot to be said for having guys like that on your team. So, and having multiple, that's on a basketball team where one or two guys like that can make a big difference. On a football team, you really need, like, your better player. You need at least one of your better players in each position group to be kind of a workaholic.
Yeah.
If you want to have that whole overall atmosphere.
Yeah, it's a good point. The pay thing is interesting to me because, Seth, look, on the surface, They're in a league where there's a salary cap. So just by definition, you need to be judicious about how you spend. You need to be smart about how you spend. You need to find some bargains along the way. You got to take advantage of guys while they're on their rookie deal. And it's going to become even more important once Deshaun Watson signs his extension, whenever that happens. I do wonder this, that we know that there's, with free agents and in the NFL, that if you want to go get some guys, there's a level of recruiting that goes on with that. And you said a little bit earlier in the show that Bill O'Brien might be a really good salesman. That goes into recruiting, but I do wonder if this phenomenon where it feels like he pays $1 million or $2 million more than he should per year for some of these guys, certainly it's not something he's going to be able to do going forward as much as he has before, but I do wonder if it lends itself, if we're trying to look at the glass half full, if it lends itself to a thought process with O'Brien when it comes to players going, well, that is an organization that rewards guys that do well on their watch, that stick to the mantra that they're putting. You got to be a good player, yeah. But if you're a good player and you're doing the things you're supposed to do, that ultimately you're going to get rewarded. Isn't it that way in any walk of life, at any job? Right. That you want to know that if you're good at your job and you're doing all the things, the little subtle things that are sort of the sub descriptions of your job, that somehow you're going to be recognized for it, right?
Well, a guy like Tyrann Mathieu, right?
Yeah.
Which I mean, I think you connect the dots, and it sure seems like Bill O'Brien really wanted to keep Tyrann Mathieu. And Brian Gain didn't keep Tyrann Mathieu, and that's maybe perhaps one of the things that led to Brian Gain being gone.
Over money, he
later.
Didn't keep him.
Right, yeah. right. Where Bill O'Brien, I think, probably, it seems like Bill O'Brien really genuinely loves Tyrann Mathieu,
yes,
and would have figured out a way to keep him around. And then I almost wonder, you know, as we talk about this Chiefs game, one of the keys to stopping Travis Kelce in the regular season was that Sean Gibson did a really good job on Travis Kelce in the regular season. And then Sean Gibson was, as far as we know, a healthy scratch in the playoff game versus Travis, you know, versus the Kansas City Chiefs. And then the Texans don't retain Sean Gibson. I wonder if at least part of that was like O'Brien still being angry over the fact that we have Sean Gibson instead of Tyrann Mathieu, you know, I don't know what went on behind the scenes or whatever it might be. He's going to mold the team in the image that he wants it.
Yeah.
And it's a great ideal. But we know in real life, Sean, just like you said, you want to reward people that do well and everything. Yeah, that's the ideal, right? But we also know in real life, sometimes your best salesman is also your laziest worker, but he's just awesome at sales.
That's right.
And like, so what do I do? Do I fire the best salesman and because of the fear that he's going to infect everybody else? I don't know. Sometimes you got to do that. Sometimes you got to deal with the devil and figure out exactly how much you're willing to compromise.
You do what any good organization would do with that salesman. You put the franchise tag on him and send him to Seattle. That's what you do.
You let him be an independent sales or something like that.
You do what any self-respecting general manager would do in that situation, and you take your best salesman and you trade him to Arizona for a guy who was really good at sales 5 years ago and is still getting paid like he was really good at sales 5 years ago.
Is sales the best sector of like any job type where it most closely resembles the way star athletes get treated? Like a lot of times, like, you can get away with a whole lot. If you're an incredible star athlete, you're going to get away with a whole lot, even though if you don't check all the boxes with the other stuff.
I think, you know what? Yes, from that standpoint, it does. I think from the standpoint where it doesn't, especially in baseball and basketball, is that your salary is not guaranteed in sales. Like, you are literally paid for your production. So I think of all the sports where the sales analogy works the best, it's football. Because in football, you find yourself teetering on the brink of having to sing for your supper more than you do in those other sports where the money's guaranteed. But yeah, like the whole "are you worth the trouble" philosophy, 100%. Like, you, And Seth's asking me this because I used to hire salespeople. I was a VP of sales before I got into radio. Yeah. Like if you have a salesperson that literally works like 2 or 3 hours a day, but they're 175% of quota, you would take 50 of those people. You don't care. It's about the numbers. It's about the productivity. Absolutely.
One of our, somebody called in to say that the Rockets player I was thinking of when I was asking about the young player who was impressed with Kobe Bryant's work ethic was Robert Horry. I was thinking of a journeyman type player. Plus, Robert Horry was older than Kobe, was he not? By like 5 years or so.
Yeah.
Robert Horry's rookie year was 1992.
Yep.
And
correct.
Kobe was like 96, 97.
Yeah.
No, this was a guy who was a younger guy that came into the Lakers when Kobe had already been established.
Okay.
Thank you, though. Thank you for listening and suggesting that.
Absolutely. All right. Let's do some headlines, Ben.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, Game 7 last night, Rockets and Thunder in a series that was just excruciating over these last couple of weeks. That was a long couple of weeks, made even longer by games being postponed for 3 days in the middle of a series. As far as fans or media covering the Rockets goes, that was about as mentally taxing a series as you're going to get. I can only imagine how it was for Mike D'Antoni and the players. They win last night 104-102. It was a James Harden block shot of a Lou Dort 3-point attempt at the end of the game that was the play that's going to be replayed over and over again. There were still 2.7 seconds left on the clock. Robert Covington missed a free throw, so it was only a 2-point lead when the Thunder got the ball back. Scott Foster calls an off the ball foul on the inbound, which gave the Thunder a chance to cut the lead to 1. They didn't. Gallinari missed the free throw. There was a lot of stuff, Seth, going on. For 2.7 seconds left in the game, there was a lot of stuff that took a long time to play out because of all these timeouts that got called, and I couldn't even clap or cheer at the end of that series. I felt like I just ran a marathon. That was a mentally taxing series, and I'm glad that the Rockets finally came through in late game situations, defensively at least.
The whole Lou Dort strategy is, I don't know if anybody else was like this, but that was just... I couldn't even pin my finger on what kind of feeling that is, but it's like when you let something in your life go that you don't think should be a big deal. Like, I don't know, maybe you didn't report something on your income 6 years ago or something, and you're like, the IRS will never think about that. Right. And then all of a sudden you get a letter from the IRS in the mail, like 6 years and 59 days later, and all of a sudden it's a big deal. That's what the Lou Dort, like the ignoring Lou Dort strategy felt like, because he scores 30 points last night, and yet... Ironically enough, it comes down to an incredible defensive play on Lou Dort himself by James Harden at the very end that clinches it for him.
Yeah. It was an ugly last couple minutes of the game. Both sides were missing layups. It was a crazy, frenetic, sloppy, in some respects, last couple minutes of the game. What saved the Rockets last night, not just that play by Harden at the end, but Harden was not good offensively again for the second game in a row. What saved them last night offensively was Robert Covington and Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon finally found his 3-point stroke. Robert Covington was sensational all night long from the 3-point arc. The two of them combined for 55% 3-point shooting, Seth, on 20 3-point field goal attempts. Without that performance, they don't win that game last night. And Russell Westbrook was not vintage Russ, but he was Russ when he needed to be at times. Last night he had 20 points, shot 45% from the field, so a little more efficient in that game than he's been in this series. I think the big thing with Russ is it looked like he's shaking the rust off. Like, I feel good about where Russell Westbrook is trending going into this Lakers series.
Yeah, exactly. That maybe that was just enough of a warm-up. Like, the scariest warm-up game in the history of warm-up games. This is like when Alabama almost drops one to Appalachian State in game one of the year or something.
Right.
The one thing I was thinking about, though, Sean, is that for somebody who proved you correct in so many ways, you sure did spend a whole lot of time angry at Eric Gordon. Ultimately, I think Eric Gordon was the guy that you pointed out as the X factor in this series.
Yes.
And in the playoffs in general. And he did a brilliant job, Sean, a brilliant job of proving your point through these last seven games. And yet you're angry at him for you. All he was trying to do is just trying to do you a solid and say, look, I was the X Factor. The one night that I showed up and actually looked like an NBA basketball player, we ended up winning the game.
I just paid him a compliment. I just said that he and Robert Covington won the game for them last night. Now, if Now, if Eric Gordon could stop dribbling into traffic and dribbling the ball off his foot.
There's the butt. Yep, there's the butt. Everything before the butt was BS, as they say.
It's a valid butt.
You are a hater.
That's not, I'm not a hater. I'm not. I even said yesterday, I bet you got me yesterday trying to compare Eric Gordon to Joe Biagini, and I said, don't do that to Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon at least seems like a cool guy to hang out with. I'd love to go on a road trip with him. He seems fun, you know? Biagini is just the worst, but no, Eric Gordon. Look, Seth, if they're going to beat the Lakers, I think it goes without saying they're going to need Eric Gordon to have games like he had last night. Like he is, you're right. He's the X factor. He is the one guy that when Eric Gordon's shot is on, they can beat anybody in a 7-game series. They can sure as hell beat anybody if this is the version of the Bucks that we're getting. And we should mention that the Bucks. One of the favorites to win the NBA title. They're down 2-0 in their series right now.
Yeah. Now, the end of that game was dicey the same way the Rockets game was. Whole lot of tension, whole lot of standing around.
Yeah.
And Antetokounmpo got called for a pretty ticky-tack foul at the very end of that. Is somebody that's been dead set against Antetokounmpo's greatness and people lauding and heaping all this praise on him. For a guy that has done some sketchy things in the playoffs himself, I did feel bad for him that they called him basically putting his hands gently on the ribs of the shooter, a foul in that key and critical moment.
The odds are out, Seth, on the Lakers and the Rockets series. The Lakers are heavy favorites. I don't think that's a big surprise. They are -300 to win the series. So that's basically the equivalent of about a 75 or 80% chance that they win the series. -300, for those who don't speak fluent gambling, it means you have to risk $300 to win $100 on the Lakers. Now, the Rockets are +240, which means you bet $100 to win $240 on the Rockets. So about 2.5 to 1 would be the payout on a Rockets bet. The Lakers.
I don't like the math on any of that. Frankly, it sounds stupid. I subscribe to Kevin from The Office's theory, which is what was it? If anybody offers you 500 to 1,
No. It's if somebody offers you 10,000 to 1 on anything, you take it.
Yeah.
If John Cougar Mellencamp wins an Oscar, I'm going to be one rich dude.
I like that. And then it becomes more like a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
You don't feel like a fool for not winning, but you get rich if you do win.
Who do you think, with those odds, who do you think the early betting action has seen heavy action on? The Rockets or the Lakers?
The Rockets.
Yes,
the Rockets.
Correct.
I think that those odds
61%
are heavily,
of the bets are on the Rockets right now.
I don't think the professional handicappers would have set that line. That line has been swayed by the betting public, who is a little bit more ignorant about things and says, well, you have a James Harden play defense. And by the way, did you know that they're small?
Yeah.
Did you know that they don't have an actual center? I mean, golly. I mean, it's science. I'm not going to, that's what they're saying.
Underrated, Seth Payne's voice for stupid people.
That's my California accent.
Okay, gotcha. All right, shifting gears in headlines here. Next headline, the Astros beat the Rangers last night. 2-1, Christian Javier, the big story in that game. 6 2/3 innings of one-run ball. Ryan Presley gets the save. In between, it was a Michael Brantley home run that provided all the offense. Michael Brantley has been spectacular since coming off the injured list.
He's the opposite of Altuve right now.
Yeah.
Altuve, when he hits it, it's been even on his hits lately, right? They've been little dribblers that are just happen to hit the seam and the shift.
Yeah.
Where Brantley is just crushing it consistently, hit after hit after hit.
Yep. So they win 2-1. They are 20-15 now in the season. They remain 2.5 games back of the Oakland A's, who they still have a series coming up against here in the next several days. They'll play one more at home against the Rangers, Seth, before heading out to California for a road trip to play the Angels and then the A's again next week. Early start today, 1:10 p.m.
A 10-day road trip, which honestly, man, normally you'd say, okay, 10-day road trip, whatever, it's a long road trip, but you're a baseball player, go out to a nice restaurant or something. These guys are on lockdown for those 10 days.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot of monotony and boredom. But I do wonder, when we look at the stats at the end of the season on all this, I wonder how it's going to stack up. I wonder if some guys will, actually do better because they're in this isolated bubble when they travel and there are no distractions or anything.
Yeah.
No other, distractions in the form of things that might weaken the legs or spirit.
I think it's like anything, Seth. I honestly think the bubble is actually conducive to some guys. You know, I think, some guys, I think, actually probably thrive if all they're doing is focusing in on, like, to me, Bregman seems like a guy, like the bubble probably doesn't affect Alex Bregman very much. The guy's just a baseball junkie, and it probably feels like back in the day when his parents are dropping him off at the Little League field, and then he's going home afterwards and he's playing video games or whatever.
Or when his parents left him home alone for the first time and he rebelled by like ordering MLB extra innings with their credit card.
Right, and lots of takeout.
Like, what did you order on pay-per-view?
Exactly.
Sorry, it was a 1984 World Series. Baseball. It looked awesome.
The 2000 All-Star Game. Sue me.
They walk in. The dad walks in. He's like, what's that sound? He hears this... And it's actually him, like, lubing up his glove, you know, getting it ready, like, putting linseed oil on the
right,
glove.
Right, right, right. That's what it is. The next headline, the Texans, they had their final padded practice. It was a scrimmage.
And conditioning his glove is what I meant to say.
Yeah, mink oil and whatnot. Yeah, it just makes weird noises, that's all. Texans scrimmage last night, the final padded practice. They will now turn their attention to shaving this roster down to 53 over the next few days. Seth, I tried to go through and do a 53-man roster prediction for the Houston Press, where I do some freelance stuff.
Why don't you just plagiarize Aaron Reese?
Well, I do. I should. He's really
smart.
Good at it. He's really
just,
good
at it.
Just, you
know, shift some stuff around.
I know. He and I were quarantine training camp roommates in the trailer. The media trailer. There were three rooms in the media trailer, and Aaron Reese and I were in one of the rooms.
You're bunkmates.
We were bunkmates, and me, Aaron Reese, and Greg Bailey of Channel 13. But Greg never went in the trailer at all. He did everything from his car.
Greg's a little too fit and handsome to be hanging out with the writers and the radio folks.
It felt a little elitist, you know.
He walked in. He was like, "I got a radio guy and a writer. Where are the pretty people?"
Right. Back to my Porsche Carrera. Yeah. He doesn't drive a Porsche Carrera. I'm just joking. But anyways, back to the 53. I was trying to do a 53-man roster prediction, and I'm like, there's nothing compelling about this because I feel like pretty much everything is sewn up. Is there anything, Seth, as you can think about the margins of what's going to be taking place with this team over the next two or three days with O'Brien and Easterby, where you go, now that would be something compelling that I think could possibly happen?
I think Kahale Waring, like four tight ends is that's a bulky number for a tight ends group. And there's reason I think O'Brien, based on what you were saying, Justin, how actively they're coaching Kahale Waring, it sounds like they see something in him and they really would like it to work out. I think if Kahale Waring got released, he'd get picked up. I don't think you're gonna stash him on the practice squad or anything. So that's one of them. I suppose the other one is just what's that? Yeah, the QT. Isaiah Coulter is not a high enough draft pick that he's a definite slam dunk guarantee. Now, when Rick Smith was the GM, draft picks never got cut.
Yeah.
Hardly ever. And this is the first time, you know, we've only seen Bill O'Brien with, this is his first year of draft class. And that's always interesting because a lot of times a head coach might just despise one of the draft picks by the end of training camp. But the GM's not going to cut the guy that he scouted and picked. And he's going to say, let's wait it out. Now that Bill O'Brien is in charge of the draft completely, and he's also the head coach, I wonder if any of these guys, even though there's only five draft picks, if there's a chance at all that he would cut them. I don't think so, just because when you draft a receiver in the fifth round, sixth round, and you've got a stacked wide receiver group, you plan on that guy not getting a lot of action immediately.
Yeah. So QT, I think, is one, Seth, that's also an interesting – that's an interesting one just because a year ago at this time there were such high hopes for Kiki QT, and now he's a guy who – he might not make this team. I mean, they've got numbers at wide receiver, and DeAndre Carter is a guy who I think has earned a spot on this team just based on how O'Brien's been talking about him.
One more guy that Bill O'Brien mentioned by name unprompted last night when he was asked who had good scrimmages – Scotty Phillips, the running back, I don't think I had him on this roster, but Bill O'Brien mentioned him. It was pretty effusive in his praise.
Yeah, that's bad news for Caron Higdon, I think. You know, because even if Phillips weren't, if he weren't to make the roster, I think it would be, you know, Higdon is a guy who got a lot of touches in training camp. Like, they were, to me, it looked like they were clearly trying to see if they had something in Caron Higdon during training camp, and he petered out as camp went on. In fact, he put the ball on the ground a couple times. He can't do that.
This is where it gets tough, though, is that, okay, Buddy Howell looks like he'll be the third tailback. That would mean you'd keep three tailbacks and a fullback in Cullen Gillespie, or
Who hasn't practiced in like three weeks, by the way.
Colin Gillespie has had this hamstring. I've got a little bit of a pet conspiracy theory on this Colin Gillespie thing. Nobody tweet this out or anything.
What
but
is
I
it?
Wonder. I wonder. Hmm. I wonder if Colin Gillespie, who's been injured, and you know, none of you media members were allowed to see him work. Maybe he's not all that injured. Hmm. Maybe they come out with a heavy dose of fullback utilization against the Chiefs. A little element of surprise.
Boy, that would be the long play right there. Listen, Colin, we're going to sacrifice your entire training camp so we can run these two trick plays in the Kansas City game.
I don't think. I suspect these guys of running shadow practices, Sean.
That is a conspiracy
when the media
theory.
Wasn't there. They were relying on you guys to basically unknowingly spread a whole bunch of disinformation. You were pawns in Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby.
I was unwittingly carrying the water for Bill O'Brien with all of our reports and whatnot. All right.
They made you a bot and you didn't even know it.
I know they did. Next headline, Leonard Fournette. He is going to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. He put it up on social media yesterday. So, Seth, an offense that this time last year was Jameis Winston throwing the ball all over the yard to Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and a tight end combo of O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate with really no great solution at running back, has morphed into a team that now still has all those guys I just named, at those weapons on the outside, Godwin and Evans, and then the two tight ends. But they've added Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, Leonard Fournette. They've added LeSean McCoy, too. I mean, if it were 2016, that would be a hell of an acquisition. Bottom line is they've added a lot of firepower. Most importantly, they've added a quarterback. And my guess is that the presence of Tom Brady is probably a big reason that Leonard Fournette is a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, both from Fournette choosing where he would want to go and Tampa Bay saying, I think we can take on this guy if there's some personality issues. Brady's had to deal with a lot of those over his 20 years in the league.
There's always a little bit of a hazard in football, right? And you should always get nervous when you start to think, wow, this team must be good because there are a lot of guys whose names I know.
Right.
And that has this feel a little bit of Leonard Fournette is like, hey, I know that name. And he was good in college. And as a workhorse back, I think he was good enough last year for the Jaguars. It's really hard to... I don't know how much I blame him for not being magnificent with the Jaguars last year, because the Jaguars were doing Jaguar things all season long. That includes having an offensive line and a passing game that didn't necessarily invite a really productive game out of a running back. They had to face a lot of eight-man fronts. I don't think that this all of a sudden puts the Bucs over the top or anything, but I think that Leonard Fournette has a very good chance of having the best year he's had, because that's what happens with running backs who play with Tom Brady. He gets the absolute most out of them because teams have to take care of the pass, and that leaves opportunities in the run game. And nobody is smarter and better at checking into the correct run and getting the right play dialed up than Tom Brady. So, yeah, I think as long as Leonard Fournette is healthy, and I think all indications are that he are, I think he'll have a pretty good year.
I do, too. All right, those are headlines.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.